stream of earnings over the life of the facility. Fact of the matter is that since startup, North Pole Refining startup in 1977, North Pole Refining has yet to recover its capital costs. Assuming the business climate remains favorable during the period ahead, the projected rate of return for North Pole Refining the next 5 years is at best about 15 to 17.5% each year. In conclusion, we're not certain of the origin of the numbers used in the text and various tables of the pricing report. We question the city selected for price comparisons, and we believe the pricing report contains obvious factual errors which raise substantial questions about the conclusions reached. We have attempted in our letter to point out some major issues or points which we feel respond to those issues which truly were the focus of the state of your committee in having this report prepared. Finally, we sincerely believe that our investment in North Pole Refining has resulted in a monetary savings to the interior consumers of our products and has greatly benefited and continues to benefit the Fairbanks area. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sewell. Questions or comments from members of the committee? Thank you.
Thank you.
Dennis Duren and Reed Williams from Tesoro.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senators, I appreciate your extending me the courtesy of waiting through this long day to hear my comments. I will be brief since most of the two previous respondents have addressed many of the issues that we identified in our response to the last pricing report. There were essentially about three primary issues that we identified as being raised by the report. The first was the petroleum product prices charged by refiners in Alaska tend to exceed the price of those products on the West Coast plus the freight cost to get it to Alaska. Our conclusions were that our prices for gasoline, diesel, and home heating oil in Alaska are consistently lower than the West Coast price plus freight to Alaska. And in many instances, the soil Alaska prices in Alaska are lower than the West Coast prices, excluding freight. Incidentally, I should say that a full detailed report has been submitted to the committee, and an executive summary has also been distributed to the committee members. The conclusions I'm giving you here are supported by the detailed facts and is quite voluminous. The report asserts that the Alaskan market is somewhat isolated and therefore competitive factors which may be at work in the West Coast market do not exist in Alaska. Our findings were that there is a strong correlation between prices on the West Coast and in Alaska, that Alaskan prices neither lead nor lag the West Coast price movements, but tend to move somewhat contemporaneous with it. The third representation was that of presumed excessive profits generated by our company in Alaska, and a pro forma income statement of our operation suggested that the company had an after-tax cash flow of $42.4 million in 1981. And $55.5 million in 1982. It was really not necessary for the authors to go through that analysis because they needed only to look at our 1982 annual report, which was published information and was available, approximately 2 months prior to the publication of the study, which actually discloses the actual profits of our Alaskan operations, including our pipeline operations. Using these numbers and allocating corporate G&A, interest expense, and subtracting the pipeline profits, which is also on file with the Alaska Pipeline Commission, the profits would turn out to be $22.2 million and $29.9 million for 1981 and 82, which is about one half of the profits estimated by the APP study. The return on investment calculated according to the study for 81 and 82 was 43% and 57%. Using the actual profit figures, the return on investment is 14% and 20%. I might also add parenthetically that we have reinvested well in excess of our net after-tax earnings from our Alaskan operations back into our Alaskan operations. And no company, and ourselves are included among them, can make investments and continue to grow unless there is a return for capital and return for the investment. So I would hope that we would continue to be able to not only survive and have capital to reinvest. We also identified about 40 additional specific errors, omissions, misrepresentations in the text combination of which suggests to us that, as it relates to Tesoro's operation at least, the study is incorrect, not supportable by fact, and has examples of some of those errors and omissions. Crude movement costs from Drift River to Nikiski, which is the crude movement from Cook Inlet from the west side to the east side, was estimated to cost 24 cents a barrel. The actual cost is $2.02 a barrel. Crude movement from Valdez to Nikiski was estimated to cost 41 cents. The actual cost is 89 cents, or about double. In calculating the Kenai refinery gate prices, the study failed to deduct federal taxes, state taxes, local transportation costs, trade discounts, jobber discounts, dealer discounts from the posted prices, resulting in an overestimate of refinery gate prices of more than $7.50 a barrel. Madam Chairman, I have no further comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have regarding the response.
Are there questions or comments on the part of the members of this committee? Senator Gilman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Jordan, you deliver gasoline and other products via the pipeline for anger. At what point does a distributor, i.e. whoever to sell it to, Texaco, Chevron, Union, or some other distributor, at what point does he actually take control of the fertilizer, has to be some additives? And is that...
Normally at their receiving terminal, where they have facilities to add that, to package to it, and load their own trucks and things of that nature. With respect to our jobbers and dealers and customers, they either pick it up at our terminal, be it in Anchorage or Fairbanks, Valdez, in their trucks, and on occasion we deliver it by arranging common carriage for them. The title normally transfers either at the terminal or in the event that we arrange the transportation for them at the delivery point, which might be a service station or bulk storage facility sometimes.
Any
distributor, though, has the option of actually picking the gasoline up and going to go ahead and refine it. Yes, we own no trucks or transportation facilities, so he would normally go and arrange his own common carriage.
I just have one just so I can get a better understanding of transportation. Who owns the transportation facility for transportation from Valdez to Nikiski ships?
We charter them from various people. Whoever has tonnage available, we'll frequently charter tonnage from Chevron, and perhaps when they're moving North Slope through to their refineries, we'll combine a load on the same ship and charter the space from them, and they'll deliver to us. We may charter a ship from Sohio and get them to diverse from their normal route and deliver a load of crude to our refinery and then go back to Valdez and resume their normal route. So it's a matter of trying to catch tonnage that may be available at any given time that we have the room to hold the cargo of crude and because we can arrange and negotiate a rate for that particular movement at that particular time.
Further questions?
Madam Chair,
just
a comment. I suppose a little bit of knowledge is dangerous, but it's been interesting and enlightening to see the perspectives, and I think that it'd be interesting for us to possibly work through to see what is the public role and the role of the legislature in oversight, if any, and I would hope there might be an opportunity to discuss this as a committee on that basis, and it's kind of like looking at a camel from a lot of different perspectives. I'm not sure how much can be gained in a sense by in this kind of a forum talking about the differences that go in. It's a very complex business, and yet if there's a role for the state, it may be the role of the executive or the administrative branch, and I would hope we might have an opportunity to talk about that in terms of policy, because people are here, they're giving their perspectives, their proprietary information. It's very difficult to pull it together and say, hey, just where should we be? And I appreciate learning something about the industry, but I think it's just a scratching of the surface.
Your comments are appreciated, Senator. We intend to look further as we examine the state's role. Are there further questions? Then, Dennis, we thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, they're okay.
In the next 5 minutes, we have, would you, Pacific Alaska,
it's just gone.
Frank, or Lloyd, would you just care to respond within about 5 minutes here? We need to wrap this up.
Yes, I would. Not having the luxury of 3 months' digestion of these comments, I would like to make some very, very brief comments. In the testimony, they referred to refinery economics. What we looked at, the investment returns, was as the refinery alone. We didn't take into consideration the terminals because we said that the terminals, the marketing process, is making money on their own, and that's demonstrated. Our rack prices are different from our consumer tank wagon prices and are different than the price in the marketplace. And that differential will carry the marketing investment. The gentleman talked about 3/10 weight percent loss or volume percent loss. He said it's cumulative for transportation, marine, et cetera, et cetera. The connotation is it might be as high as 1-1.5%. I can remember 30 years ago when I worked for Standard Oil of California that if you had anything over 3/10 of a volume percent loss, you were in trouble with management. That was before the Clean Air and Clean Water Acts. They've tightened it up appreciably. That's when oil was $2 a barrel. It's now $25, $30 a barrel. I say to you on record that if it's more than 3/10 to 5/10 weight percent, then they're going to get some new managers. Looking at some transportation charges, we looked at some rates on the Mississippi, a 10-day turnaround, about 1,200 miles round trip, was 36 cents a barrel. I think it's very dangerous in looking at data in isolation. I think what you have to do is to find out whether or not that charter is a bad boat charter, what are their operating costs. Many times they hire a tanker from a subsidiary wholly owned or an offshore company, and that's the whole gist of the, I think it's the Martindale report that the state is investigating. So I think until you go into those types of background, all you can do is what we did. We looked at other competitive rates. One of the companies, it was 36 cents in 10-day turnaround. As you know, the Drift River to Nikitski is about 100 miles less. They did say that they used, you heard in the testimony, that it started with the West Coast price, then they added transportation, handling, etc., etc. I think rather than burden you with a lot of facts, you have to remember that the North Slope crude is about $18, and the freight is anywhere from $4 to $6. I tell you that, and that's 27 gravity crude, it's a good crude. I say in California, gravities are as low as 10 gravity, very difficult crude. The price is anywhere from $18 to $28. You don't have to be any refinery genius to say, hey, 10 gravity versus 27, 28 gravity crude is a big difference.
Mr. DeLong and Mr. Pinella, I don't want you to get the impression that just because I said 5 minutes here that you will not have a chance to get any written response.
I got 3 minutes yet.
Well, I just want to clarify that okay. So you wouldn't feel that we were...
I just want to cover some real important things. I say I haven't digested this yet. The return oil was sold at a loss, and therefore this had to be debited to the refinery. I believe in the royalty oil contract there was a statement said in effect that Alaskans would not gain or be debited from the return oil that sold. There was a period of time for 1 or 2 years when return oil was sold at a premium. It wasn't credited back to the Alaskans, but the debit was. I think there's also, they talked about inflating the refinery investment by 2 or 3 times. I think if you investigate one of the royalty oil contracts, you find that the state very generously gave them the line fill, and I believe it's up to 30 or 60 days of credit on crude.
Gave them what?
Line fill. In other words, TAPS line fill.
Right.
And also gave them, Senator Ulisky, I think it's 30 or 60 days of credit. 30 days of credit at today's prices amounts to about $25 million. The state has been very generous. The consortium, there's a comment that the consortium doesn't purchase fuel. I believe the consortium gets the demands from the individual airlines, and they in turn put these requests into the various suppliers, and they evaluate the paperwork. So basically, they are acting as a clearinghouse, and I think to cover antitrust purposes. They don't see the individual prices, but I believe the consortium does negotiate. I might say that the cost of the refinery in Alaska compares very favorably with the cost in the lower 48. I believe the cost of the refinery in the interior of Alaska costs about $1,500 per barrel per day, 25,000 barrel a day refinery, about $40 million.
Risk of getting scapped, go ahead.
First off, as far as capital recovery and investment, we did, as I mentioned earlier, use the appraised value of the facilities. We also had in the bottom of the sheet here an estimate of the working capital associated with each refinery, and you can look at these and in turn determine what the correct rate of return is or estimate from that. I'd also point out on like page 192, we try to structure this so that you can get an estimate of sensitivity of things. For example, it was stated that our estimates of the product prices for Tesoro are $7.50 too high. I would suggest you look at net income on page 192, and we have estimated it at $7.43 a barrel. So in essence, the implication is that Tesoro is losing money on their facility at this point in time, if that is true. As far as return oil being accounted for correctly, I'll be happy to explain to whomever that is done properly. As I said earlier, we ignored 1980 because of the benefits that the Alaska refiners were receiving from small refinery buyers and from entitlements, run credits. These were plus signs, big plus signs. I would also point out, too, we've had a lot of discussion on the airlines and whatever. It just waits to see, because there are long-term contracts that are writing right now on these things. Page 24 is one of those. There's been a lot of quotes with respect to a sentence on the bottom of the page underlined. Let me apologize to the committee. This report, there was one piece of paper that ended up getting slid under a console on a computer that had some corrections to get in, and it had this sentence on it. What happened here was that the problem is, the way the sentence reads, it implies that there's an equivalent North Pole posting with an equivalent Anchorage posting. That is not true. The only postings you have in Anchorage are the consumer tank wagon prices. North Pole has a refinery price, rack price. So you are indeed comparing an apple with a grapefruit if you compare an Anchorage posting with a North Pole posting. North Pole is a wholesale posting. Anchorage posting is a consumer retail 400 gallons plus purchase. So the way this should have read was that if North Pole Refinery's consumer-based prices in Fairbanks resulted in a home-delivered price identical to the Anchorage price, then the residents of Alaska's interior would save over $15.7 million in fuel costs. What we were identifying here was that we just took the volume product that had been backed off from the Alaska Railroad, and we're saying, hey, this is not incurring a railroad fee, therefore this amount should have occurred. Many other comments, but we'll be happy to.
We'd be delighted to have you review and submit those comments as Senator Sturzluske and other members of this committee have suggested. We will be discussing this further. We'll be happy to receive input from any of those who wish to participate, and particularly your responses. Are there further questions or comments from members of the committee or Senator Gilman? Then I would like to thank those companies who have participated. I would like to thank Lord and Frank for being here today and helping us in our search of trying to find out what government's role should be and where we are as far as service to the state in our procedures that we're using today.